This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Anna Sheridan, missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible.
Someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil. There's no place for ghost stories in this investigation or any other.
I need you to find me.
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.
Oh, hello.
Hello.
There.
Hi.
Welcome to the episode after the finale.
Yeah.
Very excited.
Posthumous, postscript.
So,
post.
Yeah, posthumous would be a little.
Post-it note.
Dark. Post-it note, yes. poster children.
That's not even.
You didn't even. How dare you?
It's much more than a post-it note, folks, because it's an interview with Harry Groener.
Yeah. Have you ever seen a post-it note that was 42 minutes long and packed to the gills with
I thought you were
delightful
say,
anecdotes?
Have you ever seen a post-it note that's 42 feet high and can knock down because the snake?
Oh, have you ever seen that? Okay. Wow.
What?
You just made me think about Stranger Things, but maybe I shouldn't talk about it because spoilers.
I mean.
But also, what if you just built a snake or a maze out of post-it?
Out of post-it notes?
Notes.
That is very Stranger
Things-y.
That
sounds like a great rainy day activity for me. I'm going to put that in my pocket for the future.
Great. Well, it'll fit because it's a post-it note. It's a bunch of post-it notes. Okay. Anyway.
Doing great.
Hi.
Hello. Before we get into this amazing episode that Kristen conducted with aplomb, unparalleled professionalism, and really enjoyable zeal, we have a few things we want to tell you about. First of all, holy crap. It's the end of season three, as you know, and there are a few things in our shop that we want to make sure you're aware of. First of all, the season three CD is up for pre-order. That'll be going out like mid-May or so. And much, much, much more importantly, Kristen's illustrated zine of Buffy and Faith's erotic novels, handpicked so carefully and with such thoughtful consideration and compassion from various episodes in season three and illustrated so beautifully by the one and only Christine Tuna. Holy flip, it's there in the store. You can get it and you can color it or like tear out the pages and like hang them over your bed or sleep with it under your pillow.
Or maybe like don't deface it because it's a work of art.
Maybe get two copies. One
yeah,
to keep pristine.
One to color.
And one to like mess with. So you can find all that stuff and everything else that we have to offer you, of course, by going to bufferingthevampireslayer.com and clicking on shop. Did I leave anything out?
You didn't leave anything out. There's good stuff over there. Also, if you follow us on social media, stay tuned because another prom sponsor who we have not mentioned yet is Upper Deck. Upper Deck is the creator of the Buffy the Vampire Slayer board game. Many of you are familiar with this game. It's pretty awesome. Once you crack it, once you figure out how to follow the rules and do all the stuff, it's super fun. And I know a lot of you already enjoy it. Five of you actually won a board game at prom, so that's awesome.
But we've still got more to give away.
Yeah, we have a sixth game that Jenny and I have here that Jenny and I are going to sign and that we are going to give to someone over in the social media landscape. So if you want to follow us over there, we're at BufferingCast on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and you can find all the details there next week.
Now, listen, Kristen's going to sign it, but I'm going to sign it, and then I'm going to, like, rub my face all over it.
Wow.
So it's going to come also with some of my
face grease?
DNA. How grease?
Face oil? I mean, everybody has oil on their face, Jenny.
It's acceptable.
Not... Wow. Anyway, speaking of oils, the Sexual Attention Award bracket is now up and running.
Wow.
Emily, our beloved listener, Emily, who you know, created this bracket, the idea for this bracket back in season two, and then we went back and did season one. Emily has started us off. Round one has just closed. Round one. Jenny, do you want to hear some of the...
Yo, I'll tell you what. I do want to hear about it. This is so... It's really special to be this half of our partnership because Kristen, like, works really hard on the socials and is always, like, totally crushing it. And sometimes I, like, am asked my opinions about things as they happen, but sometimes I just, like, open Instagram and it's like... Sexual tension bracket for season 3 is up. Here are some of the many varied contestants. And it's like Buffy and Faith in this episode, Buffy and Faith in that episode,
yeah.
Buffy and Faith in this whole other episode.
Yeah, it's a very, obviously you all know it's a very Buffy and Faith heavy season. I want to say that the episode 3 and 4 standoff was Faith, Hope, and Trick, Buffy and Faith versus Beauty and the Beast, Buffy and Faith. And it was such a close margin, super close margin, but Beauty and the Beast, Buffy and Faith won. I want to let you know some people that advanced to the final round who are not Buffy and Faith. Pat and Joyce. Landslide. 984 votes to 26 votes for poor Ken and Buffy, who are up against Pat and Joyce.
Who was Ken?
Ken.
In the first
Ken from Anne, of course.
Yeah.
26 also,
people voted for that?
Yeah, yeah. And also, of course, now I feel like Joyce and Giles from Band Candy, right? And I feel like it's unfair that they're part of this season because they deserve a lot. And I don't know. I don't think anyone's going to outshine.
We should just
Buffy
have an SDA bracket for every single scene in Band Candy where Joyce and Faith. Oh my God, Joyce and Giles are together.
God. Wow, starting all new sorts of fan fiction over there.
Yeah, okay.
And then the thing that I am most amazed by is that so up against Bad Girls, right, was the Zeppo. Here's what I'm amazed about because the Zeppo Sexual Tension Award went to hashtag Yes All Men. I want to know, at this point in time, there are 45 people who voted for Yes All Men over Buffy and Faith and Bad Girls. 965 people voted for Buffy and Faith. But I just really...
Do you think all 45 people who voted for that were hashtag Yes All Men?
No, I don't know. I think people are that's like fun, but I would like to sit down. I would like to do a
Some
special...
Some people are in denial about what's going on in Bad Girls.
Yeah, I just want to have a special episode where
petty
I sit down
crime
with those 45
larceny,
people.
Larceny. Breaking and entering. Assaulting police officers.
So...
Backing up against each other and undoing one another's handcuffs.
Wow. And of course, the other high scorer in this that was not Buffy and Faith is Willow and Vampire Willow advancing to the second
round.
So you can participate because there are several more rounds of voting, or at least two more. I don't know how many. Emily does it, okay? But there's more rounds of voting.
There's always at least three, right?
At least. And so you can go just to bufferingthevampireslayer.com/STA for sexual tension award. So bufferingthevampireslayer.com/STA. It'll take you to the second round of voting, or if you're listening to this a little late, the third round might be open and that link will redirect you to the third round because I'm smart at computers. And so you can participate in the voting and we will find out in just a short while who is crowned the champion of season 3.
Can I just say, I want to agree. I want to back you up and say that you are smart at computers.
You want to back me up as we're talking about the Sexual Attention Award?
Bracket. I gotta go.
Okay.
Whoa. In front of the children?
Anyhow, those are all the things we have to say about the Sexual Attention Award bracket.
Yes.
But we have other things to say, too.
So many things. The next one is, of course, a call to action. As many of you know, we have been blessed with a great number of volunteers who have come together to engage in the massive process of transcribing every single one of our episodes. And if you want to be a part of that, if you're like, wow, I love to help and type and listen, and maybe you just like want an excuse to like listen to us talk a bunch more times,
mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm,
rewind 15 seconds, rewind 30 seconds. I don't know like what kind of detail-oriented stuff you're into, but if you feel like that is a thing that you want to get involved in, consider this your call to action. Consider this the bell tolling for you, my friend. Mm-hmm. If you would like to help be a part of this, you can go to bufferingthevampireslayer.com/transcriptions.
Yeah. And it's, you know, I mean, I think we have at least 10 of the episodes transcribed already, and it's just an amazing way to make our episodes accessible to everybody. So we appreciate those of you who've already done a lot of hard work.
Oh my goodness. Yes. Also want to let you know that after the interview, we have a special end of season 3 jingle for you. So stay tuned for that at the end.
Unlike other people, we didn't forget somebody.
Yeah, we value someone as a person.
So
not just as a foil or a one cog in a machine.
Yeah. So I don't know who it is, but whoever it is going to get a special jingle after the interview. This is, as you know, the last episode of our season 3, and we want to let you know that we'll be coming back at the end of May. So we, as you know, we take a little break between seasons so we can rest and recharge and be ready for a whole new season of talking about college and singing songs about it as well.
Yes. Wow, I already did that, and I'm going to do it again.
Sang songs about college?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you just want to put Bat in the Hatches one song at a time at the end of
each
episode? That'd save you a lot of work.
It saved me a lot of work, and also I'm interested to see what lines up.
Oh, yeah, that's
probably true. Nothing, except, Beer Bat,
Drinking
Song.
Yeah, Beer Bat and the Drinking Song would line up perfectly. Great, awesome. Well, great. So we figured out some business here live on the podcast with you, but we will miss you in the next over the next few weeks. We love you.
We care about you very much.
And we'll be back.
Please enjoy your break from us.
Yeah, we'll be back after Harry to say goodbye and to usher you into the special jingle. But until then, go on into me talking to Harry about his experience playing the mayor, so many people's very favorite villain. He was such a delight. He was just the most wonderful human. We talked and talked and talked and talked, and he would have just hung out with me all day, I think. He was just the most generous with his time. Came to our house. It was very special. So enjoy our conversation. Lots of fun little stories in there. Thank you for coming here. This is just the reason the way I was able to get in contact with you is because the first guest that we ever had on the show, on the podcast, was Armin.
Yeah.
And that was an incredible moment for Jenny and I because we, you know, we signed up for IMDb and so I said, you know, and my wife, she like would never think to ask, you know, they would never do it. And I'm the opposite. I'm like, sure, we're doing this cool thing. It'll be great. So we reached out to Armin and got a yes, you know, like an immediate yes. And I don't know if you've spoken to him about that interview, but we wound up talking to him the day after the election. I was like, are you sure you want still? So the interview was obviously about Buffy, but we were all in such a state. But then during that interview, he told us that you and he worked together.
Oh, yeah, we're part of the Antius Company, which is wonderful theater. And we just recently built, I think you know, he told you, we just recently built an arts complex in Glendale with two theaters and great library. And that was, you know, 25 years in coming because my wife and I have been with this company from the very beginning. We're founding members. Well, I've known Armin for a very long time. And getting back to Buffy, he was very tasty. He was very
there
tasty.
We have it, right?
He was very tasty, I must say.
I just rewatched both parts of Graduation Day. God, it's like I love the episodes, but I forgot how much. They're just incredible. The whole season 3 is a wonderful season.
It really is. And, you know, when we first started this, it was an 8-episode arc.
Mm-hmm.
And because of the fans, thank God for the fans. Thank you so much. I had more episodes came. But right at the very beginning, they actually showed me a model. I believe it was about that high. What's that, about 2 feet, 2.5 feet, 3 feet?
Yeah, yeah.
Showed me a model of what he was eventually morphs into.
Like a clay?
I don't know what it was. I don't know what it was, but it was about that. It was all painted and colored and all that. And I said, that's what eventually will happen. I went, oh, how great.
This will be you.
This will be you. I said, how terrific. What was interesting about Graduation Day, two things I thought was fascinating. It was a night shoot, obviously, because it's a working high school. So we had to try to finish up as quickly as we could. And we were just getting there. There was one costume malfunction, which was mine, which took up the time. But as it started to get light and they really had to finish, they finally finished. But what was funny to me was here we all had to get the hell out of Cheyenne to get out of there because of high school. But it was like we all had to run and get undercover because the sun's coming up.
Right.
Because of all, we're all vampires.
Right.
It was as if we were all vampires, everyone on the crew and everyone, the director, everyone, we're all vampires. We have to get underground before the sun comes up. So we're running out. We're getting out of this, getting into our trailer, getting into our cars and getting changed in the trailer, getting into our cars and getting out of there so the kids in the high school could start.
Oh, my
gosh.
But
the wardrobe malfunctioned.
Yeah.
This was what they wanted when he begins to transform.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted it to kind of look like when the Hulk gets bigger and
totally.
things tear and fall apart. Everything tears and falls apart
on
the upper part. So what they did was, God bless them, these costume people, they attached 10 to 12 fishing lines divided in half. You know, six on one side, five or six on the other side. They were controlled by maybe three people over here and three people over here.
So you were like a Thanksgiving Day float.
Right. And what was supposed to happen, they were to pull these fishing lines and the costume was supposed to just sort of fall apart and the transition happens. Well, you'd get there. You said, okay, we're going to go for this. And the director yells action. And we start the scene and the things start happening. But all that happens is just this. It's just, and the audience can't see this. But it looks like something is pulling on, but nothing is happening. No tear, no break in it. Nothing's happening. Cut. You know, what's the problem? They come in, they try to figure out what the problem is. They say, we try it again. Well, we try about two or three or four times. Maybe one little piece, you know, happens over here. One piece, something. But they worked forever
to
rig
that.
This thing.
And it, right, because I'm trying to think now, I just watched it, but that doesn't happen, right? Like the clothes don't
Not really.
Yeah.
Because they eventually said, because we had to get out of there.
Right.
They said, well, we'll do this in front of a green screen, a blue screen, whatever, mm-hmm. which is what they did. They had the podium and they had a blue or green screen, I forget which, and the costume and did it again. And it worked better for that, but not the way they conceived it.
Yeah.
And I thought that was terribly sad.
All that work.
Terribly
all that
sad.
Work.
All that work for these people, and they couldn't get it to work. But it all.
I'm still wondering about that little clay version. I wonder where that
where
is.
Where that is,
yes,
right?
Where did that
go?
Oh,
I would love to have it.
We've had some incredible, we interviewed Nerf Herder, who's the band who did the theme song, and they brought us, you can actually see right behind your shoulder up there, there's a little piece of styrofoam, which is a piece of the Hellmouth that they gave us that they were on. It's sort of up on top of the Buffy books. It's a little Buffy area.
Oh, there it is.
Yes,
I see it.
Yes.
I see it.
So like when we say, when we're talking about where is this little clay, like, you know, whatever it was, it's out there. I'm sure someone has it.
Well, someone has to, okay, you're all out there and you all have to research
yes.
it. Where is that
Detectives.
Little model? Where is the model? Find out, do a research, find it, track
Please.
It down somebody, find out where that model is.
So let's go back. We started at the end and I think we'll go back there because there's a couple of other questions we have about graduation day. Me and all of you listening who submitted these incredible questions. But I would love to start at the beginning of Buffy. Like, how did you come to the show? Was it just an audition?
Just a regular audition.
And did you know the part?
It was actually my second audition. The first audition, and this is kind of funny. The first audition, and thank God I didn't get it, was, I believe, for the first principal before Armin.
Oh my gosh, over. Principal Flutie.
Whose bust.
Rest in peace.
Right, whose bust is in the hallway opposite the entrance to the cafeteria.
Oh.
So if you remember the episode where the mayor meets Buffy for the first time in the cafeteria.
Yes, we just watched
the
that.
The doors open, wow. You'll see a bust of the principal. That could have been me.
Oh my gosh. I didn't even notice that there was a bust of the principal.
Is,
now I'll have to
and
go
that,
back and look.
I believe this is true. And I didn't get it, thank God.
Right.
And then so this role was the second audition, and I just went in and I read and it all worked out, thank goodness.
So let's talk generally about the mayor, right? Because so many of the questions that people asked to ask you were about the idiosyncrasies of the mayor and how that came to be. Did you come in and those were written, or did you work on that?
I think it's a combination. Joss is brilliant, as we all know. He's
yes.
brilliant. He has a very clear vision of this guy who is in complete control. And there might be a few little, like moist towelettes and all that stuff. That's all written in.
Uh-huh.
But those are also clues
right.
for the actress. So you can you know, riff on it and see, well, how about this and how about that and how about this? And for the most part, they liked everything how I did what he wrote.
Mm-hmm.
But there wasn't too much of that. Wasn't too much, you know, improvisation. It was pretty much structured. And if ever I got to a point where it seemed like it was being too much of a villain, like, you must pay the rent, you must pay the rent. Then Joss would just say, no, just throw it away, throw it away, throw it away. So, I mean, here's a man who is pretty much, or feels himself pretty much in control. There's nothing that really scares him. He knows it, the trajectory. He knows the objective. He knows where he's going. Mm-hmm. When you have that kind of confidence, you don't have to do very much at all. You don't have to really raise your voice. You have the power. And you know you now have power over, or you're gaining power over these vampires. You know, eventually you will have power over Buffy. Mm-hmm. You'll have power over, and you know that's going to happen.
Yeah.
You just know it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So there is a kind of relaxation to it, and there's an enjoyment in that power, I think, that he has. Mm-hmm. There's an enjoyment. He enjoys his power over these people. He doesn't really abuse it. You don't see him, you know, torture people right and left. It's just there are certain things that will inevitably happen.
Yes.
They just have to happen because that's what I've chosen, and I know it's going to happen, and we're just going to go there.
Totally. As you're talking, I'm picturing the scene where you have the checklist, sort of like, yes, picked up my laundry.
Become immortal.
Yes. Yes. Like, did it. I knew I was going to do it, and I've done it.
Right.
I feel like, too, the mayor, and because of his checklists and because of his hand sanitizing wipes and the many other things, he just has such a vulnerability. Mm-hmm. And so I wonder how you found that. Like, how you found that mix of, we know this character, you know, he's one of these characters, few, I think, where you're like, I know that he's evil, and I know, yeah, I'm supposed to not like him, but I just can't not love him, you know?
Well, I think the vulnerability comes in once Faith enters the picture.
Yes.
Because he never had children with his human wife, with, mm-hmm, the first wife. He never had children with her and watched her die. I assume watched her die. And then Faith comes into the picture. I mean, it was very, when I read that script and he opens the door and there's Faith, I went, whoa, whoa, yeah, what is this, right? And therein begins a father-daughter relationship that is, it is unconditional. And she has never had that kind of relationship, an unconditional love, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And she gets that from him. It doesn't matter what she does. He won't criticize. He won't do it. He adores her. And I think on some level, she gets that from him. But that's also his weakness now.
Mm-hmm.
Now he's vulnerable. And I brought this up to Joss. I said, where is he vulnerable? But now when Faith comes into the picture, I said, that's the Achilles heel. That's where he's going to make the mistakes.
Mm.
And I think he took that and then, you know, went to, because that isn't.
Wow. Was an actual conversation, yeah, between you.
Yeah. But I don't know that he didn't already have that.
Right, right. You know? But still, that you sensed.
Yeah, because now he's vulnerable. Now you potentially could hurt someone he loves. And up to that point, he doesn't really love anybody except himself.
Right, right.
And so Faith comes into the picture, and it's a whole, she changes the ball game. She changes it completely.
Someone related to this asked, do you think that the mayor had, I have strong opinions about this, genuine affection for Faith, or was it just highly skilled manipulation? And followed by saying, can someone that clearly evil be capable of such a fatherly love?
Sure. I say absolutely yes.
Yeah.
And where's the drama? Where's the conflict if it isn't? If he's so completely in control and manipulates even Faith, then where is this? For me, there's no drama.
Absolutely. And having just come off of watching Graduation Day again, it seems very clear. Mm-hmm. The mayor is not just manipulating. The mayor is definitely devastated.
No,
when it comes to
Faith, and Eliza was wonderful. She truly was terrific. And you look at what that character does. When the mayor tries to orchestrate a kind of normal father-daughter relationship and gives her a sundress, you know, and just, well, try this on as opposed to all that leather and boots and things like that. She does. She puts it on. She goes, well, what do you think? You know, and for her to do that.
Right.
It tells me that she is accepting of this relationship. She, at some point, wants this kind of relationship, mm-hmm, that she's never had. And they give that to each other. Yeah, he certainly is. I think he showed it in the course of the episodes with Faith. But that, you know, Joss, but he wrote that in.
Yeah.
That's what he put in there. But yes, he is. You know, you could ask that question of Hitler.
Right.
Did he ever love, did he love Eva Braun? No, I don't think so. You know, did he love any of those really evil, evil, evil people? Did he, well, you can ask that about a president. Does he love anyone?
Mm.
Does he love his daughter, his sons? I don't think Melania. I think Melania, I think if I heard the, I heard this story, and I don't know if any of this is true. You all can research this. But I heard that if he had not won the election, she was going to divorce him. Have you heard that?
I haven't, but it is certainly not a shock.
She was planning on divorcing him. Now, for all of you out there, I don't know if any of this is true.
Mm-hmm.
This is hearsay.
Right.
You can all look this up.
This is the gossip corner.
This is the gossip corner. So what does that mean?
Yeah.
And, you know, he's someone who, there's no empathy there. There's no any, so is there any empathy for his children? Really? Mm-hmm. Real empathy for a parent? But I think with the mayor, there absolutely was. Someone comes into his life and he goes, wow. Because we both think alike. We're both on the same wavelength.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
About, you know, killing is okay.
You know,
killing and power and all that is really good.
Well, it's like methodical. It's there's something methodical both about the mayor and faith. Like there's a line from A to B, and we're just going to follow that line to get from A to B.
Exactly.
They really share that.
Look, here's this great knife. Here's this great knife. Isn't that wonderful? It's not a car. It's not a
right.
It's a credit card for some. Here, kill more people with this.
I think in that scene, that, because as we're recording this episode right before we're about to air Choices, which is the episode where she gets the knife, and I believe in that scene she gets the knife, and you're also giving her cookies. It's a constant juxtaposition. You answered a question that I had for later on in the interview, but I'm gonna go there now because you brought up our president, and I could not have you here without asking, and I think you just answered it, if you think that the population was worse off with Mayor Wilkins at the helm, or if we're worse off now.
No, he was a very efficient, he's extremely efficient. He can get things done. He can get public works to happen. He can make sure the garbage is taken. Yes. He can make sure that city is clean.
Yes.
And people are taking care of this other thing that he's doing. Something totally, that's his thing. No, but in terms of his job, no, I get the impression that he was a very efficient and mayor.
Yes.
And he got things done, and if he certainly chose, but he can get things done, he can get the correct people to work for him and get all that stuff done to serve the public.
Totally.
I believe he's very clear about that.
Yes.
Very clear about serving the public.
Yes. Yeah, I think one of the first scenes we ever see the mayor in, it's down in the sewers, and like he makes a phone call and is like, we're going to need cleanup in the sewers, you know, like definitely taking care of the city. But also the reason you brought it up in my mind was because not only is the mayor efficient in ways that our current administration certainly is not, but also, you know, I think you posited that the mayor had the capacity for love and vulnerability, and we might not be seeing that in our current leader.
I certainly don't see it. But who couldn't see that from the very beginning? I don't understand. Who couldn't see what kind of person he was?
It's the question that will stick with me, and I think most of us, for the rest of our lives.
My God.
Truly.
What the hell are we going through?
Because I could see voting for Mayor Wilkins. I could see not realizing that there was a giant snake demon contained within.
He's smart enough not to make sure that you don't see that.
Yes, yes.
He knows how to make that. And when you got vampires to help you, you know?
Yeah.
Because they could just, they're just great. Vampires are great.
Yes. A little question from Instagram that came through about the mayor was, or about you, really. Can you apply hand sanitizer or wipe something clean without thinking of the mayor?
Oh, yeah, of course.
You can.
I don't think about the mayor all the time. I really don't.
Well, I think that, who is the person that, Sarah R. I think Sarah R., we're all immersed in season 3 right now, you know? So we've seen you with hand sanitizer wipes every week for some weeks.
So something may remind me of it, but, you know, I'm not there all the time. I really do enjoy talking about Buffy and talking about the mayor because that was a great, great gig for me. You know, doing episodics is fine. You get to do episodics, but most of the time they're not very interesting, and you're playing characters that are simply there to serve the story. So you give information to the story. There's very little character development in some of the things that you do, so it's not very interesting. And this, it was so much fun to go to work. The cast was incredible. I mean, they were just, you know, Sarah has been doing this since she was, you know, yay high, mm-hmm. and is so professional and always right there. But everyone, I really got the impression that everybody really liked each other a lot and liked to play with each other. And that, for the most part, happens, but sometimes you get situations where it's really just a business relationship. But in this circumstance, everyone seemed to really enjoy each other. And I loved coming into that environment. I loved playing with them.
Did you know the show before you, I mean, you auditioned?
I did know about it before, and I saw the movie, because I'm a vampire freak. I love the myth.
Tell us more. What vampire? Who are your favorite vampires?
Well, you know, I loved Anne Rice, all of Anne Rice's books. Mm-hmm. I thought she hit it pretty close to an idea of what a vampire should be. Mm-hmm. I loved all that stuff, but I did know the story. When the show finished, when it finally was done, I missed it. Not so much, you know, doing it. Yes, I love to do it, but I missed the story and I missed the kids. Mm-hmm. I wanted to know what happened to them now. What's happened to them? Where did they go? What did they do? I really missed them.
Yeah. Do you have any fun? I mean, you must have some fun stories from set, some things that really stick out in your
mind.
The
last two episodes was interesting because usually you get a script and you could, you know, the night before or 2 days before, whatever, you have some kind of script that you can get into work on. We didn't have any script. All we got was a synopsis. But they basically said, come to work. Here's what the story is going to be. I said, okay, great.
Huh.
So we all come to work. There's no script. And we get one scene finally. And so you get the scene and you get the lines and all. You go in to rehearse it. Then you go away and they light it and do all that. And you come back and you do it. While you're rehearsing it, Joss is literally over in the corner writing the next scene.
Wow.
Yeah. He's literally, I saw this. He's over there writing the next scene. So you didn't really, they didn't have the whole thing written. So, but they wrote it and wrote it and wrote it and wrote it. And it finally all got shot.
Incredible.
Yeah. So I'd never been in that circumstance before, but it was fun. And it was, everyone's in the same boat. So there wasn't as much pressure to really know the lines. I mean, everybody did, but you didn't have that pressure. Oh my God, I've had this kid for 2 days. I should know this now, because I don't want to hang anybody up.
Yeah.
Because the longer you're on there, the more money gets paid to everybody else.
Of course.
To crews and all that, because of overtime. Mm-hmm. So, and I don't like to be in that position. So, but everybody's in the same boat, and we all had just a fun. I just loved it.
Did you have a sense when you were working on the show that it would become sort of this like cult behemoth that it is today?
The cult stuff, no. I didn't really have a sense that it was going to be as big as it was. I certainly knew that it was very, very popular, but I had no idea that it was going to go the way it was going to go, or that the mayor was going to be as popular as he ended up being. A lot of the fans, when I could talk to them, they say one of the things that's the scariest thing for them about the mayor is that he looked like your guy next door. He was, and that was one of the words that Joss used in the audition, is that he's innocuous. Don't play the bad guy. He's mm-hmm. just like, he's like a regular everyday guy. Could be your uncle, could be your neighbor next door that you know forever and deep down inside. And how many people like that don't we see in the news?
Right.
That are the serial killers. Mm-hmm. And you look at them and you go, they don't have horns coming out. They don't have scales or teeth or fangs. They're like normal people, and they're terribly dangerous and evil. And you go, wow. There you go. There's a great study. Just look at them, see how they behave.
Yeah, there's something very haunting about the overlap of the mayor's evil and his self-identification as a family man.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Right?
There's a lot there.
Right, I know.
Yeah. So I would love to talk for a minute about the special effects, because you have some serious special effects.
Great ones, right?
Head splits in half.
I know.
I mean, you're constantly having things like split you in half or go through your hand or go through your chest. Or...
I know. I want to get that sword in me.
Yeah.
I love that. Whoa.
Yeah. That was the exact delivery.
Wait, what? Wait a minute. Yeah, all that technical stuff is really fun to be a part of if you've never ever done something like that before. How do you do that? How do you do all that stuff? But they're very specific, and it takes, you know, they're very, everything is blocked. Everything is done in a certain way. And you say, all right, you go to there, and then you'll pretend to take it out or whatever it is. And mm-hmm. it's all done by computer and CGI. So it looks like the whole sword is taken out of your chest. Or when the hand thing happened, when that happened.
Yeah.
They all pretty much do that in the computer.
So that, like, when your head splits in half, you just had to stand still.
Well, guy who comes and splits it, you film him coming towards you and then raising it up and coming down over your head, and then it's computer when you see the head goes like right. that and goes back together again. but he has to come run up and as if, and then, okay, hold it. Right.
Gosh. Just very fun. I think up until this point in the series, you might have the most of special effects that we've seen, you know, of a character, like just so many different things. And I also wonder about the scene there's a couple of scenes with spiders. There's the scene where they attack, and then yes. there's the scene where you eat them. I would love to hear about both or either.
Well, the scene where I eat them is actually more interesting.
Great, let's go
because
there.
Because they asked me, they said, well, do you have any food allergies or anything like that? I said, no. So I said, okay, because what we're going to do is, because it's easier to mold, we're going to make the spider out of Tootsie Rolls. Well, for anyone who's had a Tootsie Roll, and I'm sure you all have out there, you know it takes a long time to eat a Tootsie Roll. A long time to dissolve it, right?
Yeah.
So they made the spider with the Tootsie Roll, and they painted it black with black food coloring or whatever it was. And then you chomp into it and you start eating it and all that, and you realize this is going to take a really long time. So I said to the director, I said, look, I'm not going to be able to eat this whole thing through this take.
Right.
But what I can do is I can pretend like I've eaten it and swallowed it and then take the, and you'll see this in the episode. And I have my napkin. So then you wipe your mouth. And when you wipe your mouth, you push out the rest of the thing into the napkin. And so then you finish it off. I wipe my mouth with the napkin and push the rest of the Tootsie Roll into the napkin so that, you know.
Thank goodness the mayor was so so clean and, you know, it's very believable that he would of course be wiping his mouth.
Of course.
After eating spiders.
You know, all that.
That also makes sense. Yeah, I noticed watching today that as you're eating them, really just disturbing. It's just not fun to watch. but that your mouth is turning, like you can see, the food coloring. What is the food coloring?
Yeah.
The black food coloring. What, of course, we assume is just spider juice.
Spider juice. yeah, right.
Let's go to graduation day. I know we talked about it already, but there's just so many things. I think this is a fun question. I'm wondering how you feel about the mayor's end, like about the culmination of it. And someone specifically asked what you thought of his final words. Well, gosh. Did you voice that and then they manipulated your voice?
No, I recorded it. They just, you stand off in the corner with a mic someplace and you just do it over and over and over and then choose the one they want to do.
Right.
Well, gosh, it's something, it made sense for me that he would say that and not the F word, you know, not, oh, fuck.
Right. Right. Not a family man. Oh,
no. He wouldn't say that. He'd say, oh, wow. He's surprised at what happened. He didn't expect that to happen at all.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
He knew it was all going to, he knew exactly what was going to happen. Then when I'm this guy, I'm going to do this and this and this and this and this. But he's been totally surprised and totally screwed over by Buffy, God bless her.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
Totally. And so he is actually surprised.
Mm-hmm.
I lucked out. I really did luck out in this experience. And I'm so grateful to Joss and to everybody that was involved. They've been really, really wonderful to me. And I got to tell you, many times I go into one audition and so many of those people are Buffy fans mm-hmm. and they know the role and all that, and I wonder how many roles I might have gotten because mm-hmm. they were fans of Buffy.
Right.
Oh, we got to have the mayor on the show, you know, that kind of thing. There are dividends that continue to come with this show because of the fans.
You must get recognized.
I do, and it's very funny because some of the parents who also watched the show and also fell in love with it, they will kind of they'll come up to me and say, "Excuse me, I gotta say, I'm a fan. My daughter, my son, my daughter, they loved the Buffy. I also watched it, and it was really, really terrific." And they'll look around like, "Is anybody watching?" And they say, "I really enjoyed it. You did really, really great. Thank you very much. Thank you." You know, or they'll just jump in the deep end and they'll say, "Oh, I'm a big, huge fan of Buffy. Oh, I just love that show. That was so great."
It's, so. I mean, it's still, I know, I'm sure you know this better than most people, but it continues to find new fans. And the fans that exist, we continue to consume it again and again. You know, it's just, it's something that has more life than most other things I've ever experienced.
And the one sentence I think is really interesting that is consistent. They would say, you were the best villain. And I went, that's in the writing. That's Joss. Mm. They were affected by his... by the evil, by how bad he was. And he didn't have didn't have a horn, didn't have a scale, he didn't have claws, he wasn't a big old monster, he didn't have any of the obvious demon kind of things. He was just like, he looked like you or me. And he was just a regular guy that had all the evil inside. And that is something that we know exists and is a reality. This, mm-hmm. the scaly people, the horned people, those are fantasies.
Mm-hmm.
His evil is reality mm-hmm. in our society today. That kind of evil is reality where that can happen.
Today's episode is brought to you by Regal Cinemas. If you're anything like me, you deeply enjoy going to the movies. Going to the movies is probably among my top three all-time activities. I love seeing films on the big screen. I also love being around other people who are watching the same movie with me at the same time. And of course, I love eating giant buckets of popcorn. If you feel the same and you like going to the theater, Regal Unlimited is something that just makes sense. Regal Unlimited is the all-you-can-watch movie subscription pass. It pays for itself in two movie visits. You can see any standard 2D movie anytime, no blackout dates, no restrictions. When you want to watch a movie in 4DX or IMAX or RPX or ScreenX, there's so many ways to watch movies these days, your Regal Unlimited membership gets you into those premium experiences at a reduced cost. And with Regal Unlimited, you don't only save money on the tickets, you will also save on your snacks. And as previously mentioned, I love snacks. The only thing that can make me love a snack more is saving money on buying a snack. Members get 10% off of all non-alcoholic concession items with membership. Regal Unlimited, all you can watch movie subscription pass. It pays for itself in two visits. So if you're planning to see two movies this month, join Regal Unlimited and sign up now. You can sign up in the Regal app or on regmovies.com/unlimited. Sign up for Regal Unlimited using code BUFFERING and earn 10% off your 3-month subscription. Please let us know about all of the movies you see and how the popcorn is.
Hey there. Ever wonder what happens to all those amazing screenplays that never make it to the big screen? Well, wonder no more. Welcome to Table Read Podcast, where we bring those undiscovered gems to life. Picture this, talented actors giving incredible performances with the occasional laugh or blooper thrown in, produced by award-winning pros. From drama to comedy, TV pilots to feature films, there's something for everyone. And guess what? We release new episodes every week, so don't forget to hit that subscribe button. Table Read Podcast, where great stories finally get their chance to shine.
Yeah. Do you have, you said you like vampires.
Yeah,
and I'm
do.
Wondering if you have, not to villainize all vampires, I'm so sorry, vampires. But do you have a favorite villain, having played one so masterfully?
Oh,
do you have,
gosh. That's a hard question.
Or a villain that you love. It doesn't have to be a favorite.
Well, to go back to a classical play, if you want to go back to a classical play.
Always.
And considering our company, the Antaeus Company in Glendale, California.
Yes.
Put that plug in. a very interesting villain is Richard III. And the reason I bring this up, because there's a similarity between Richard and the mayor. Mm-hmm. Because Richard is very clear about his villainy. He is not freaked out by it. He says, I'm a villain, and I'm a villain because of this and this and this, and I'm okay with this because I know where I'm going. I'm going to be king. I want to be king. The mayor says, I know where I'm going. I'm going to go do this. I'm going to take mm-hmm. over the world, or he's going to become whatever he's going
right.
to do.
Right. Yeah, well, what is he going to do if he succeeds?
What is he going to do? What are you going to do when you've eaten everybody?
Right.
Now what are you going to do?
Now what?
No, but he's really fascinating. In Shakespeare's play, very different than the real Richard III, but he is very fascinating, and I love his manipulation. I love his relationship to the audience when he's out there talking. And if you're doing it correctly, you get the audience on your side, mm-hmm. and they really like you until they realize, oh my God, I like this murderer.
Yes.
I like this killer. And yes. what's wrong with me?
Mm-hmm.
So he's a fascinating character. I'm sure there are others.
Also, they have the same name. You're really raising some
oh, that, that's, there you
perhaps.
Go.
I mean,
there you go.
Richard Wilkins was around for a long time, yeah. perhaps even back.
Is he Richard Wilkins III?
Yeah.
Is he Richard, is he really?
Ooh, I don't know. I should know that.
Richard
we
Wilkins.
Both should probably
Richard
know
Wilkins the
It sounds right.
That sounds correct, isn't it?
Should I look it up?
I think you should.
I can look it up right now.
Look it up right now. Because I remember that sounds like it might be right, Richard Wilkins III.
That would be really bananas.
And they just, you know, I read a book about
it. Yes.
It is?
Yes. He is Richard Wilkins III.
So he is Richard III.
Wow.
Oh, man.
If you all could see my eyes right now, they're the size of saucers.
I didn't even go there when I brought up Richard III. I did not even go there.
Right.
With Richard Wilkins III. Whoa.
That is, everybody's brains just exploded.
Now I wonder if Joss was thinking about that. Now.
Right. It seems like too close a parallel.
Because when you see that play and if it's done correctly, you end up laughing at Richard. You have he is stunned by how everything is working the way he is planning. He planned it out.
Yes,
and that it's actually working toward that. I mean, he really enjoys himself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just bizarre.
We just cracked something big here.
Man.
I just have one more question and then a message from one of our listeners. But I wanted to know, you know, Faith and the mayor, as we've talked about already, they have just this beautiful relation, like this really heartbreaking relationship. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if you have like a favorite moment or a moment that really sticks out to you. And, you know, you have so many with her, but I wonder if there's one that stands out.
Well, as I mentioned before, the scene where he has an apartment for her.
Yeah.
He gets her an apartment and then he wants her to put that dress on.
Mm-hmm.
And then she comes out and he just says, you know, you're just so beautiful. They're just mm-hmm. so beautiful. I think it's a very sweet, sweet moment.
Yeah.
In their relationship, I think.
That is a really staggering moment to watch, too, though. As, you know, seeing Faith, having known Faith for the whole season, seeing her not only change into something that she says isn't her, but accept it because of how much she, like, wants that.
She wants to please him.
Yes. Yeah.
And
that's the scene where he refers to himself as her father, I think, directly for the first time. So
I think so.
Also makes sense.
I don't remember, but I think I think you're right. Yeah, yeah. And it has to be that. It has to be that kind of relationship. And I was so worried during it. I asked once in a while, there's nothing, you don't perceive anything sexual here.
Mm-hmm.
Because that cannot be. It cannot be that. It has to be paternal. It has to be. That
yes.
if you see any of that, let me know, tell me, and we'll adjust it.
Mm-hmm.
I was really concerned about it. I did not want that. I didn't want the audience to get any of that.
Yeah, it's that's something that we talk about on the podcast a lot, that line, because Faith's character really goes to a sexual place. Like, that is what she knows. That's the way she knows to connect. And so seeing her relationship to the mayor is so different than any relationship we've really seen or that she's probably had.
Yeah. And I don't know that in Eliza's journey, when she thinks about Faith, that she has Faith question him as an older man seeming to have interest in a younger woman.
Right.
Whether in her character, when she played it, not that you would see it, but that she would think about what does he want? What mm-hmm. does he want?
Yeah, there is a moment in the beginning. The first thing she says is, I can't remember the line. I'm like a scholar at this point. The amount of times I've seen season 3 making the podcast. But there's a scene where she says, you know, like, how can I think? Like, she says something sexual. And that's mm-hmm. when he's very clear,
yeah.
you know. So I'm not sure either, but there is that decided moment of... Yeah.
It can't be that.
Right.
It diminishes, it cheapens it. It can't be that. There's something pure about their relationship, I think, something simple and just pure
mm-hmm.
in their minds.
Totally. Their relationship, I think, has reminded us too of, in a very different way, but Spike and Drusilla's relationship earlier in the series, where you have, again, like, they're two evil people, but their love is real. It's not mm-hmm. rooted in evil.
No, and what's important is how, and I said this before, is how unconditional it is.
Mm-hmm.
Because for me, real love for another human being there have to be no conditions. If you have a list of things, well, I'll love you if
mm-hmm.
you have this and you're that and you're this and you're that. You're already dead in the water.
Mm-hmm.
You are dead in the water. It has to be unconditional. It doesn't matter. None of it matters. No matter what, I will love you no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it has to be if you love somebody, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Also, we're getting love advice now
from the mayor.
Yeah, from the mayor. So one more thing that I just thought of, our listeners. So we've had a great time this season with the mayor, obviously, in so many ways. But one thing we've all got a good laugh out of, and I think they've enjoyed, is there's a very specific scene, and I don't expect you to remember this, but there's a scene where the mayor is pouring milk, and it's just milk left out on the counter. And we were so upset by it because the mayor is so germphobic and cares so much about. So we've talked about this milk so often. If you have any insight into why the mayor would have ever left that milk out on the counter.
You're right. I don't remember this.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a
I don't remember this,
detail.
But you're absolutely right. He would smell it or something. He would test it first before putting it in his. Was he going to put it in coffee or tea or
no,
something?
No, he just a straight up glass of milk.
Oh,
it was
glass
the 90s,
of milk, sure.
Remember?
And it was standing out.
It was just standing out, just out on his, like on the little table behind his desk. And we thought, what?
But, and was it a glass of milk?
A glass of milk for somebody else. I can't remember who he was giving it to.
Well,
probably Faith.
So potentially it could have just been put out.
That's true. That's true. We don't know what happened before.
And he knew that it was just put out. Because if it was something like that where it had been out for a long time, Joss may have used that and to have him come over
right.
and sniff it and toss it out and put a new glass. He may have used it as a bit or
totally.
Something.
Totally.
But
thank
only,
goodness.
It's the only way I can justify
now
it.
Now we can put it to bed.
He had just poured it.
Right. The mayor would never pour milk out of a pitcher that wasn't cold to the touch.
That's right.
He knew. Oh, so I have a message. Normally this would be the part, and I am going to say these things too, but somebody sent in a message that really captured, I think, how I feel and how so many of us feel about you and your work and the mayor. This listener wrote in, I don't have a question so much as I just love to say thank you for bringing to life such a charming and creepy and loving and threatening and funny and sinister and golfing and stabbing human and snaky and utterly fabulous half dad, half villain, half Giles doppelganger. Yes, that's 1.5 total Mayor Wilkinses, all while simultaneously maintaining such a snazzy shrunken head collection. The Buffyverse will adore you forever, Mr. Groner.
Oh. Well, that's just one of the sweetest things. Thank you. Thank you so much.
And I think, you know, people have been excited when we've interviewed, when we've had people on, but the amount of people who were just like, that's my favorite villain. That's my favorite. Like, are you kidding me? I mean, the impact I think you've had on the Buffyverse is a lasting one. So thank you for.
Oh, you're very, very welcome. And the golf, she references the golf. One of the hardest things. Because I don't golf. It was in that scene. Do I hit the ball? It's supposed to go into a glass?
Oh, is it a glass? Yeah, I picture in my mind. I remember it like a little.
Was
cup.
It a glass or was it one of those regular golf? Things.
Like a little hill with a hole in it thing?
Yeah.
I don't remember.
I don't remember because I remember it being, I think it was one of those little shell things that mm-hmm. go like that. And because I don't. I said, I'll do my best. I'll do my best. I just did, this is very funny. I just did an episode of, it has the two comedians on it. They're fabulous. What is it? Ghosted.
Oh, yeah.
Ghosted, an episode of Ghosted. That was last year. And I had to, I had to golf. I don't golf. And I had Sam McMurray, had a dear friend, Sam McMurray, who golfs. And he was also in the episode. So I said, Sam, you got to help me. You got to help me. He says, don't worry, Harry, I get you. So he showed me how to hold it. He showed me how to do all that stuff. And the scene is I don't do anything. You just make it like you're getting ready to do it. Then the director said, all right, Harry, you got to hit it. I said, what? You got to hit it. I said, I don't golf. He said, well, man, you got to hit it. all right, okay, I'll do the best I can. And son of a gun, if I didn't hit it. Now, it was sliced, which it should have been.
Oh. Because
he wasn't a very good golfer.
Right. Oh, that's
but,
good.
But I did actually connect. I hit it, and that thing took off. But it went to the left and went into a bunch of bushes. And when it did that, then the rest of us just improvised. I mean, oh, man, it went into the bush. Now what do I do?
Right.
And then went off with the scene. But I actually got to do that and play golf and hit it into something.
Incredible.
That was fun, but it freaked me out.
Did you have to get the ball to go into? Were you the person who hit the ball into the cup in that scene?
Yeah, it took a number of times because it would go right or it would go left or whatever it is. But the camera was there; they wanted that angle,
right
there. So I had to hit the ball toward the lens.
Oh, gosh.
For them to get the ball going like that.
good, no cracked lenses.
No. That wasn't CGI. That was
real golfing.
Yeah.
Oh, well, thank you again and again.
Oh, it was my pleasure. What fun.
Before we go, I want for people to know where they can find you now, what you're working on, especially, I know you're really active in the theater company that you talked about.
But. Yes. For anyone who is in the Los Angeles area, for all of you in Los Angeles area, the Antaeus Company is a company that's been around for about 25 years. It is a classical theater company, but we're not limited to doing just classical plays. We just built this theater complex, the David and Kiki Gindler Performing Arts Center, and the reason their name is on it is because they were instrumental in putting us over the top in terms of raising money.
Mm.
This is a company that's been around for over 25 years. My wife and I are founding members, and we opened the theater with Cat in a Hot Tin Roof that my wife and I played Big Daddy and Big Mama. And we opened in, and that was last year, and it was a huge hit. And it was very lucky for us because it was the first one out of the gate because we had just finished building it.
Right.
And it was the first production out of the gate, and it was a hit, thank God. But we'll see. We'll see about any other stuff. I want to do some more film. I want to do some more. There's a film that is out now on Netflix called A Futile and Stupid Gesture. Do you know this one?
No.
A Futile and Stupid Gesture. Apparently, people really, really like it. This is about National Lampoon and how that all started, that eventually morphs into the people that went to Saturday Night Live and all that kind of stuff. That's on Netflix, A Futile and Stupid Gesture.
Oh, awesome. I'll check that out. Yeah. And we'll put, obviously, all of these things in the show notes so that people can click the links and find all the things that you're talking about. But thank you again so much.
It's been my pleasure. What a joy. I love talking about Buffy. Buffy is my pal.
So do we. We're in the business of Buffy over here. Yeah. So we love it too. It really brings incredible people together. And what's been remarkable for me as I've interviewed more and more people from the show is I see from like the listeners and like being amongst other fans and stuff that they're just the best people on the planet. And then the more people that come in from the show, it's just like everyone is nicer than the next person. Everyone is just so... And I think that's why it is as special as it is.
But you know this, it always comes down from the top. You surround people of like minds.
Mm-hmm.
And Joss is just an incredible artist and writer, but he's also a really nice guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he just, I can only imagine he would surround himself with other really nice people. And then that just trickles on down.
Yes.
So that the people you have in the cast and all, they're really nice people and it just makes sense to me.
Well, we still have years to go with our journey. but thank you again. And I, for one, will be coming to see productions at the theater company because we live so close.
They're doing a really wonderful production of Harold Pinter's Hot House right now.
Oh, cool.
And it's actually really, really good. It doesn't matter because we double cast our plays.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter what cast you see in this particular circumstance. The play after this is Native Son. This is an African American story, and that it will be single cast, and then the one after that is 3 days in the country, which is based on Turgenev's A Month in the Country.
Great, we'll check it out.
Antaeus.org for all those.
Antaeus.org.
Antaeus. Oh, yeah. Antaeus. Antaeus.org.
I would not have known how to spell it. I have to admit. I would. Amazing. Thank you so much, Harry.
You're very, very welcome. Thank you.
Yeah. Wow. That was so great.
Yeah, you liked it? You had a good time?
How Harry Groener's laugh, I mean, I guess this just makes sense, but his laugh is the laugh.
It really is. Like,
it's so wild.
Every time he laughed, I was like, oh my God.
Holy crap.
It's real. It's really happening.
What
a fantastic interview. You did such a great job.
Thank you. I had so much fun doing it. It's been so, like, just talking to so many of the people who've been a part of the show has been such a joy, truly. But Harry was just very special.
Yeah.
And so if you're in this area, honestly, if you're in the Los Angeles area or if you're here, you should really check out the theater company that he spoke about, where Armin Shimerman is also a part, like, participating yeah. member. Super cool that those two are still working together.
Antaeus. I want to get into it.
Antaeus.
I enjoy
exactly.
theater.
Right? So yeah. Who doesn't? Anyhow, thank you again to Harry. And we hope you all enjoyed that as much as we did.
Yes, of course. And I, as you may know, am Jenny Owen Youngs, and when I'm not making this podcast with Kristen, I am making songs. You can hear some of them at jennyowenyoungs.com/buffering, and you can give me a shout on Twitter at Jenny Owen Youngs.
You can, and if you'd like to find me over on the internet scape, you can do so at kristinnoline.com. That's KristinNoeline. That is my Twitter handle. It's my Instagram handle. And it's also my website. So you can find me in all of those places. And you can learn about the work that I do when I'm not watching Buffy the Vampire Slayer, which is work with the LGBTQ community and families and educators, loved ones of the LGBTQ community. You can learn all about it over there.
Buffering the Vampire Slayer is on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at BufferingCast, and you can always email us at BufferingTheVampireSlayer@gmail.com.
You sure can. And if you want to support our work, you can do that. Of course, you can buy some of the new merch we have, the Buffy and Faith erotic novel zine illustrated by Christine Tuna. You can pre-order the Season 3 CD. You can get yourself Smash the Demon Lizard Patriarchy crewneck. I mean, there's a lot of different options you have for Smash the Demon Lizard Patriarchy, but I have the crewneck. I'm actually wearing it right now. I wear it every single day. I think I need to get another one for myself.
It's because they're cozy.
It's so soft and cozy. So you can go on over to BufferingTheVampireSlayer.com, click on shop to find out more about all of that information. You can also, while you're on our website, you can click on Patreon. Patreon is a way that so many of you support this podcast, and it really is why we're able to do the things that we are able to do. So thank you if you're already a supporter. And if you want to become one, you can go on over there, click on Patreon. There's a few different levels of giving. You get all sorts of fun things. Buffy watches, the songs in advance, Q&A videos. It's a lot of fun. You get to also be in the secret Facebook group, which is just a miraculous place.
It's the most special place on all of the internet.
Yeah, I think so. So you can do those things. You can also, as Jenny mentioned, you can follow us on social media. That's always helpful. And next week we'll be doing a giveaway of the Upper Deck Buffy the Vampire Slayer board game, which Jenny and I have signed, and Jenny has rubbed all over her face.
That's right.
So that's it. And then I just want to remind everybody of the Sexual Attention Award bracket.
Yes.
It is open. It will be round two is open now, and then we'll go into round three. You can find it at BufferingTheVampireSlayer.com/STA. What are you
this
giggling
is
about?
Such a ridiculous thing.
It's the best thing.
It's so great.
It's a wonderful thing. So join us in your voting. And I think that that's all we have until we're back at the end of May.
Yeah. And don't forget, after we howl, there's a very special jingle waiting for you at the very end of the episode.
I'm so excited.
So, till next season.
She's from Boston, keeps it spot and doesn't need any frills. Seems like she's the only one who's taking care of herself. Don't call her loser, she's a bruiser with the power and skill. But the demons deep inside her are the hardest to kill.
Have you ever watched a futuristic sci-fi movie and wondered, but wait, could any of this really happen? And will I live long enough to see it? That's what our show Hypothetical is about. I'm Carrie Bechet, and on this podcast, we ask what-if questions about the future. Like, what if we could read minds? What if the world's digital data was erased all at once? What would happen if the Yellowstone supervolcano erupted? Then we explore that question two ways, through speculative science fiction and through dialogue with brilliant scientists. The result is a genre-bending narrative that's interwoven with real facts provided by literal geniuses. And spoiler alert, a lot of the science fiction out there, it's not nearly as far-fetched as you might think. come time travel with me into the future on Hypothetical. New episodes on Tuesdays, available on all your favorite podcast apps. Just search Hypothetical. That's HYPERTHETICAL.